This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB. This is the Jeff, Lori, and Nick Show on the FCB Radio Network.
Welcome to the Jeff, Lori, and Nick Show. And our show is an informative talk show that's focused on finding solutions. And our purpose is to provide healthy discussions that lead to building a stronger community and stronger nation through promoting principles that promote business and bringing people together and just making our nation a better place. We're excited today in this great day in the season of spring that feels like winter. It just so happens to be like that. All this changing weather. We have a great guest here this morning. Very exciting. It's election season, as you all know, as we approach the primary coming up this May 2nd. Today we have none other than Pam Hawkins, attorney Pamela Hawkins, who is a candidate for the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas Juvenile Division. That's Juvenile Court Division. And she's going to tell us, just introduce herself, and we're going to just jump right into it. Pamela Hawkins, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great. It's just such a busy season right now as we approach the May 2nd primary. So we've got a lot to talk about. And first, we're just going to get right into it. Attorney Pam Hawkins, give our listeners a little bit of your background as you approach the bench, as you pursue.
I'm running for election, I am born and raised Cuyahoga County. I attended Cleveland Heights schools all the way through, so I am public school educated. I received my bachelor's degree in psychology and child development from a private Christian school in Arkansas. It's called Harding University. I then returned to Cleveland to begin my professional career. My very first job was as a case manager at Mertis Taylor at 134th and Kinsman for adult mentally ill. While working at Mertis Taylor, I started and completed my master's in education from Cleveland State. It's focused curriculum and instruction, early childhood. I then started my MSSA, which is a Master of Science in Social Administration. It is a specialized social work master's at Case. I completed that degree in 1995. At that point, I was working for a specialized and therapeutic foster care network. I then went on to work for Applewood Centers, and in 2000 decided that I wanted to make a career change. So I attended Cleveland Marshall College of Law. At Cleveland State, graduated in December of 2003, was admitted to the practice of law in May of 2004. Throughout my entire professional career, I have also been licensed by the Counselor and Social Work Board. I had an LSW. I now have my LISW, which is a licensed independent social worker with supervisor designation. Once I graduated from law school, I worked for a medical malpractice firm. I worked for records acquisition company. I worked for a insurance subrogation law firm. I then was in private practice working almost exclusively juvenile court, domestic relations. I did a little bit of adult criminal work as well. I then went to the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office and worked in their Children and Family Services Division, prosecuting cases involving abused, neglected, and dependent children. I left the prosecutor's office in March of 2015, have been in private practice ever since. My practice focuses almost exclusively on juvenile court issues, whether it is a delinquency matter, which is what we call a juvenile criminal case. I do child support matters. I do private custody matters, which is between unmarried parents or if there's a relative seeking custody of a child. All of that comes to juvenile court. I do agency representation of parents as well as guardian ad litem work, which is in this county an attorney who represents the best interests of the children involved in the case. As part of all of that, I actually do not maintain an office, trying to keep my expenses down because the bulk of my work is court appointed. So I go where my clients are. I go to their homes. I go for kids where I'm guardian ad litem. Not only do I go to their parents' home, I go to where they're placed. I observe visitation. So I have, and as a social worker, I did home visits. So that was nothing new to me. So I have done home visits in every neighborhood in Cuyahoga County. I have been into all of the CMHA housing, either for children or if I had senior clients when I was working at Mertis Taylor. So I am very familiar with the neighborhoods. I still go into all of those neighborhoods now, even as an attorney, visiting with my clients. So I see on a daily basis what challenges they are facing. And I firmly believe as part of my practice that these are individuals who really need someone who's going to be a strong advocate and voice for them. And that is why I have focused my practice on court-appointed work at juvenile court.
Yeah, I think that brings a great level of experience. Just making the home visits in all of the communities across the county that you would be representing, I think that really makes brings a special touch, and it says that you can actually relate to people no matter where they are. And your professional employment and extensive educational background, I'll tell you, that's very impressive. And what's needed on the bench. What kinds of interests or volunteer activities did you pursue while you were in school or pursuing your various degrees?
So I have, when I was in school, I volunteered through, since I went to a private Christian school for undergrad, we did not have fraternities and sororities. We had social clubs. So I engaged with my social club in community volunteer projects. And the university was in a small town, so we often would go to Little Rock and other areas to help serve meals, meet with people, just kind of provide general support. When I was getting my two master's degrees, most of my volunteer work was at my church with the children's program, with our community outreach programs. I didn't do a lot of other work because I was also working full-time while going to school, so I didn't have a whole lot of spare time. Between finishing my MSSA and getting my law degree, I looked for activities in the community where I could engage, where I could reach out to people, meeting their needs, whether it was ensuring that they had food or if they had some other need, transportation, things like that. A lot of that I did through my church and through other networks that I had made while I was working as a case manager and then as a coordinator with the foster care network. I have spent a lot of time connecting people with the services that they need in the community. I find that my church relies on me a great deal because I have done so much connecting people with services, ensuring that they're accessing benefits, that they know where to access food, that they know where to access a hot meal, helping them get clothes, do those kind of things. So I'm a resource for my church and anyone else that calls the church and needs those services. During law school, I did mock trial competition. I did several. I was more a coach for mock trial. I did as much volunteer as I could through the law school, again, reaching out to the community. I knew when I started law school that I did not want to go work for one of the big law firms. That just wasn't me. It wasn't what I wanted to do because, you know, I'm looking at it and going, how do I balance this with, okay, you're working 60, 80 hours a week and you're getting this huge salary, but it wasn't giving back to the community in the way I wanted to give back. Since then, for the last 2 years, I have volunteered with Mass Generosity Unlimited at Mount Gillian Baptist Church and the Urban League at their monthly food giveaway. I started that and started out being one of their delivery drivers, and I'm now at the church with them every month.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's in the city of Cleveland, or is that?
Yes, that's it. It is at 71st and Cedar. And I'm there. Actually, I go every month, and it turns out they needed canopy tents, which I have. So those now go with me every month in case it's raining or snowing and they have weather that they need to deal with. They needed a new, their dolly broke one of the days I was there volunteering with unloading trucks. And so I supplied them with a new dolly.
Oh, that's good to know that you're a part of that, because I've actually seen that on the television, on the news. I actually know the pastor there, Pastor Nance.
Yes.
Yeah, dynamite leader, and that's in the community. So that's great. I think just having that connection with the religious community that's so, that plays such an integral part in just sustaining the community and serving as like the glue in our communities is just paramount. And you having that connection and that knowledge and that so much experience working with the religious community and churches and other nonprofits, I think that just brings a level of experience that folks can feel very comfortable with, knowing that you have that type of a background and standard.
Yes, thank you.
What about in the area of criminal law? Have you really, how much practice have you had in that area?
My criminal law practice with adults is limited because I have chosen to focus on juvenile. Juvenile court, I have criminal cases on a regular basis. I get most of it is appointed work because that is my preference. But I go in, I have handled gang-related cases. I have handled bindover cases. I have handled serious youthful offender or SYO cases. I've handled minor misdemeanor crimes. And the only felonies I have not handled as an attorney are the murder cases. And that's because there are very special rule requirements. I have been guardian ad litem on those cases. So I have worked with the attorney who's representing the child. So I am very familiar with what's required. I just haven't taken the Supreme Court required training to represent someone who's been charged with murder.
What are some of the type things you see in these delinquency cases so that our listeners can have an idea, better understanding of what you would deal with and what type things you see?
So initially what I started out with was a lot of receiving stolen property cases, a lot of petty theft, which are mostly misdemeanors, some misdemeanor assaults. And as I moved on in my practice, I started getting more felony cases, grand theft, felonious assault, which is the difference between an assault and felonious assault is felonious assault means there was a serious injury of some type to the victim. So dealing with those, trying to figure out and working with my client and their parents to figure out, okay, how do we address this? How do we figure this out? Do we want to take this to trial? Do we need to take a step back and see, can we get this worked out to a lower level felony and go from there? I have also handled riot cases. I have handled kids who have committed an assault while they're in Department of Youth Services, which is kids' prison. So I've kind of covered the gamut. I've had several clients who are charged with murder, but again, I was their guardian ad litem, so I wasn't actually the trial attorney. And most of those cases, the prosecutor filed a bindover asking for them to be sent downtown.
When we take this break, after this break, we're going to take a very quick break. And immediately afterwards, I want you to speak to the issue of repeat offenders.
Okay.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis and FCB Radio Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what really goes on behind the scenes in the entertainment industry? Join me, Victoria Henley from Cycle 19 of America's Next Top Model, for an inside look at fashion shows, concerts, and a wide variety of events throughout the United States, featuring exclusive and insightful interviews with both seasoned and up-and-coming artists. Listen in and subscribe to Backstage Pass with Victoria, an FCB radio podcast on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jeff, Lori, and Nick Show on the FCB Radio Network.
We're back with attorney Pam Hawkins, who is a candidate for the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas Juvenile Division. Pam, the question I was leading into was, what do we do with these hardened young juvenile offenders who it seems as though they're in there for robbery, and then next thing they're in there for having a gun, and they're released, and next thing they've assaulted someone, and it just goes on and on. And some of these are repeat offenders, and it seems as though the system doesn't work, and the crime gets worse and worse until they, in many cases, on the 14th occasion, they've actually shot someone or murdered someone. Can you speak to that? What can you do?
So I see this pattern. I have a number of clients who literally, as I'm trying to resolve one case, they pick up another one, and then they pick up another one because they've been released, and they're released on maybe on home detention with electronic monitoring, which means they're stuck in the house, or they're released on home detention without electronic monitoring. What I see happening is there's no support or services put in place for those kids and their families while these delinquency matters are pending. So we wait till it gets resolved, and then we're going to start addressing it. And we might resolve 3, 4, 5 cases at one time. And at that point, it's, okay, we needed to take a step back. What can we put in place for this child as a support, making sure that they're attending school, that they're not getting in trouble while they're in school? Does the family need some extra supports? One of the things I have been looking into is, if elected, I would have a trauma-informed courtroom. A trauma-informed courtroom is a courtroom that looks at not only the juvenile offender, but at the whole family. And how do we wrap services around this entire family so that, one, we don't get this child to continue being a repeat offender, and two, how do any younger siblings not follow in their footsteps? Because that's the other pattern I see, is I've got this progression of, I've got these kids coming that, okay, well, we had this child and now we have a sibling, and the sibling is following the same pattern. So I think we need to look at, one, what can we put in place before we get to disposition, which is sentencing for a juvenile, and what can we do to wrap around, what can we wrap around this family so they've got the supports and what they need to help their kids not get into this pattern. I also think we need to address the fact that there are many juveniles who seem to be of the opinion that there's nothing juvenile court can do to them. Well, I committed a low-level felony or a misdemeanor, they're not going to put me in the detention center. Well, maybe they need a stint in the detention center. Our challenge is, one, our detention center is understaffed, which makes serious concerns, because the kids that are there are kids who are charged with felony ones, felony two, violent crimes. And so you're going to put a kid with a misdemeanor in there and expose them to these very aggressive kids. So the only way someone who doesn't have a felony one or felony two gets held in the detention center is with a warrant or a judicial hold. So we need to address that as well.
Absolutely. I heard what you said about the no support system, and I totally agree with that. So there needs to be some type of system that they can go into while they're awaiting their trial or sentencing. And I like what you said about the wraparound services. So would you think that maybe what institutions could play a part in that? And what can our audience do? Just what can the average citizen do? And you mentioned like churches. I think that's great as a resource. Is there some way you could actually send them to some of these services that some of the churches in the communities provide?
Absolutely. One of my goals is to have a complete list of which churches have supportive programs that have, because I know there's a lot of adult reentry programs and churches that do services with incarcerated and recently released adults. I would like to work with the churches to have something similar for our youth so that I can, as a jurist, I could refer them to this particular program that's going to help them with how do you write a resume? How do you get a job? How do you get a work permit? How do you get a state ID? What can you do besides, okay, you need to go to school and do your homework and maybe get them involved in tutoring programs, because I find a fair number of my kids who are involved in the delinquency system have IEPs, which is an individualized education plan, which means they're in some type of special education services. So they need extra supports. What are the services in the community that we can use to support those? If we have a kid with a substance abuse problem, let's get them involved in a substance abuse program as soon as we can. We don't have to wait until disposition for them to be involved in these services. If they need mental health, let's get them an assessment. Let's figure out what this child and their family need to avoid coming back here.
I like that. Apparently, and it's quite obvious that right now it's just not working. I'm not sure what level of that type of service is presently intact, but I'll tell you, whatever it is, it's not working, because we see the rise in violent crime and folks are scared of our youth, and the youth violence is just, it's really a crisis. So what else, is there anything that we can do right now? Two things: to find out more about you and to reach you, and possibly our listeners reach out to you and your campaign if they'd like to help you. What can we do?
So I do have a website that has more information about me. It is PamelaHawkinsForJudge.com. I also have an email, which for my campaign, which is PamHawkinsForJudge@gmail.com. You can reach out to me either way. My website does have a link so that if you want to volunteer to help out at events, to connect me with a service provider, let me know. I will come and talk to anyone who wants to hear me speak and hear what I want to, how I want to change and support our youth, because I firmly believe that we have got to take this on as, for no stealing from Michelle Obama, it takes a village. We have to step up and say, okay, we as a community need to figure out a way to help and support these families so that these kids have a different future than the path they're on right now.
Absolutely. Well said, Pam. And without a doubt, we need good judges. And I think oftentimes people hear that that phrase, we need good judges. But I think at this time, at this junction in time, and in our city and in this era, we really need judges that are going to effectively issue out sentences that protect our communities. And also, at the same time, get these young people on the right track. And it's just not happening right now. And lastly, I'm going to ask you this. I know we're running out of time, but okay, why should our citizens vote for you? Why should citizens vote for Pam Hawkins?
I believe that I bring the experience that I bring. I've been out in the community. I'm out. I see the challenges that are facing the families. I have gone to their homes. I go to their communities, and I'm willing to work with them. And I believe that I bring a fresh perspective to the court because I have been a prosecutor. I have been a social worker. I've been a defense attorney. I've been a guardian ad litem. So I've handled all the types of cases juvenile court handles, and I have done my homework. I believe we need to make a change at this point in time. And with my experience and education, I believe that I am the best candidate for that change.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I'm going to ask you this. Can you explain your judicial philosophy for our audience? Just how do you approach the court, the bench? How do you, you know, what type of a courtroom would you have? What is your judicial philosophy? How would you approach cases?
So my first approach is trauma-informed, which means I'm looking at not just the child and what their experience has been that brought them to this point, but the whole family. I believe that we need to work with everyone, because we don't want to see a family struggle with, okay, we've addressed the issues with this kid, but now we have this kid coming along doing the same thing. So my judicial philosophy is to try and work with the entire family and get them to a place where they can manage and make changes in their own life and get those supports in place, which I know is more a social work philosophy than a judicial philosophy. But in order to help them make the change, you have to look at the whole person, not just what they did. I realize as a jurist at the adjudication or trial phase of the complaint, you have to look at what happened and the evidence and make a fair and impartial ruling.
Totally in agreement with you. And I think, and I certainly want to say thank you, Attorney Pam Hawkins, for being our guest today. We're going to invite you back to the show sometime. Would that be okay?
That would be perfectly fine. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to coming back and speaking to your audience again.
And at this time, I want to say thank you to our audience. And remember to keep fighting the good fight. And remember that we can all do better.
The FCB Radio Network, first-class broadcasting worldwide.